Hey, everybody. So, right now in America, in the United States, just in case you didn't know what I meant by America, it's post-election season. So, Donald Trump was elected a couple of weeks ago, and it was a total blowout. He won the popular vote, which I was surprised by. Anyway, now that Trump has won, and the numbers have proven that he did really well with male voters. All of a sudden, BreadTube have been making all of these videos lately talking about how they may have been too hard on young men. Yeah, I saw all of them talking about this. Vosh did a video talking about it because they lost the election, so they're having a little bit of an autopsy, which is good, good for them. But they always come at it from this really condescending tone. Like, how can we stop these virgins, these loser virgins from voting for Trump? How can we stop them from doing it? They don't really care about the deeper issues, right? But conversely, the manosphere, as it's colloquially known as, they also have really terrible takes as well. Like the manosphere, it's just crybaby sort of mentality. Like I remember many years ago, Coach Red Pill did a video. It was called Men Are Tired. And I remember reacting to that video at the time and saying that it's all just a bunch of crybaby nonsense and that it's very unmasculine to sit around complaining and whinging that, you're being mistreated. The manosphere is a mixture of victims complex and copium. So we're not fans of the manosphere over here. But with that being said, okay, with that being said, there are these kind of, I would describe them as subtle ways that men get shamed, okay? And not only is it men getting shamed, but there's actually something more insidious that I've noticed, something more, a more nefarious phenomenon, which is that there is a kind of self-internalized shaming that men first get put upon them by society, and then they begin to put it upon themselves, okay? And I want to give you some actual examples of what I'm talking about. So, have you ever gone into like a Target or, one of those department stores that sells like just the cheap clothes, like I don't know about you guys, but if I'm going to buy like jeans or something, I might go to like a proper store. But if I'm just going to buy socks or whatever, I'm just going to go to like Target and get some El Cheapo socks, right? But their stores are usually quite large, and the men's clothing section is right at the back, okay, in some of these stores. So what you do is you sort of walk through the different aisles, and you see the area that's kind of tangentially sort of clothing-ish. But it's not the men's section. You've got to cut through like the kids' section or whatever. And you're walking through different aisles, getting turned around, trying to find like the men's socks section. And you're walking through the kids' section. No, this is not it. And then you turn around, you like turn a corner, and all of a sudden you're in the underwear section of the Target, of the women's clothing section. And what's worse, there's women shopping there. And you have this little like ping, this like, I've got to get out of here because they're going to think that like I'm like a freak or something. Yeah, the fact that I'm shopping, even in 2024, like in the society that we live in, there's still this little like tinge of like embarrassment. Now, if you ever find yourself in a situation like this, there's no need for you to feel any shame. Okay, you have just as much of a right to be in the woman's underwear section as any woman. Okay, it's a public place, you can go there. But you see, there's a phenomenon that you've probably heard of called self-censorship. Well, there is a kind of, I guess you would call it self-shaming that takes place. It's very subtle, but it's something that I think men do to themselves, right? Like, have you ever quit a job preemptively, because you thought you were going to get fired? Okay, it's the same phenomenon. It's a kind of self-censorship. It's a self-shaming. In fact, let me tell you a quick story. Okay, now I may have been reading too much into this. Okay, I may have read too much into this this little transgression, I guess you would call it, this little event that I saw at the mall. So a few months ago, I was at the mall, and I sat on like the seats that they have, you know, the mall furniture that's probably, you know, filled with bed bugs under the cushions. Anyway, so I'm sitting there for whatever reason, and there's an older man sitting there. He's, I don't know, 65, 70 years old. A nice old man, you know, a grandfatherly looking guy. Like, you know how like old people will sometimes wear their Sunday best to the mall? Like they'll wear like a suit jacket to the mall. Anyway, he's sitting there, minding his own business, and a woman comes up and she's like pushing like it wasn't a pram, it was like a trolley, and the kid was sitting in the back of the trolley. It was maybe 3 years old, I don't remember. And the woman kind of maneuvered the trolley in such a way that the little kid and the old man are facing one another. And the little kid began kind of like in a playful kind of way, like poking faces, not like in a mean-spirited way because they were like two or three, but, you know, began to kind of excitedly look at the old man. And he reacted like a lot of nice old men do, where they'll start smiling and sort of poking faces back, trying to get a rise out of the kid. Anyway, so I'm looking at this interaction off to the side, and I'm thinking, oh, that's cute, you know, like an old man and a little kid, you know, poking faces at one another. And yeah, it was innocent, right? Anyway, the mother gets up to leave because she's not paying attention, and she notices this interaction that's taking place between her kid and this grandfatherly old man. And the old man looked at the mother, you know, he looked up at the mother with a smile on his face, kind of inviting the mother into the moment. And rather than smiling back at the old man or, you know, having a quick chat or whatever, she grabs the trolley that the kid is sitting in, gives the old guy a dirty look, and then hurriedly pushes the trolley away. And I looked at the old man, and you could see his face sort of collapse into like hurt bewilderment. Now, I could have been reading too much into it, but the vibe that I got from the woman is she was essentially gesturing to the old man, like, don't you talk to my kid, like, you know, that's just inappropriate, you know, like, how dare you as a stranger talk to my kid. That was the vibe that I got from the interaction, and I think that's the vibe that he got from the interaction. And I was thinking about it, like, after the fact, right? Like, as I was driving home, I was thinking about it. You know, even in the 1990s, growing up in small-town New Zealand, you know, the 90s, not that long ago, like, yeah, you know, we had Stranger Danger and all that good stuff growing up in the 90s, but I don't think that my mother would have reacted like that to some old guy at the mall, you know, just being friendly. I remember walking to school, you know, there's like two or three old guys, because, you know, again, small town New Zealand in the 90s, yeah, there was lots of them in my town. And, you know, walking to school or biking to school, you'd go past the old people's houses, and it was perfectly normal. Just, you know, they'd say hello, that, you know, ask, you know, if it was cold, they'd mention how cold it was and everything. And, you know, I am aware that there are other factors, you know, in general, in more ways than one, you know, the Anglosphere has become a lower and lower trust society for reasons that I won't go into. You know, there are some movies that I like that are embarrassing to like. Okay, you know how, like, you have movies that you really like, but you find it's embarrassing that you like that movie? One of my favorite movies is Brokeback Mountain. I know. MGTOW Dictionary will have a field with this one. Brokeback Mountain, one of my favorite movies. I remember reading Roger Ebert's review of the movie. And he said something, he brought up a point, right? Because one of the main characters, who's obviously gay, I assume most of you know the basic, you know, bare bones plot of Brokeback Mountain. One of the characters is gay, and his wife, you know, his newlywed wife, sees him out the kitchen window, like behind with the other male character in the movie, because they're both gay. And she doesn't confront him about it. Okay, she doesn't go outside, like, well, you know, what is this? Because the movie takes place in, like, rural America in the early 60s. And the point that Roger Ebert brought up is that probably the reason why she didn't confront him is because during the 80s and 90s and 2000s, you had a lot of, like, really trashy talk shows like Jerry Springer, which didn't appear to have any sort of political impact. But what they did is it desensitized people. You know, like the whole idea of, you know, I'm cheating on my partner and the partner walks out and it's another man, you know, kind of thing. And the wife is shocked and everything. That would have been just totally inconceivable in the early 60s. But throughout the 70s, 80s and 90s, especially sort of in the 90s, there was a lot of like seemingly irrelevant trash TV that nonetheless brought it into the psyche. It provided like a file in people's brains, you know, like a file tucked away deep inside that gave them a precedent for that sort of a thing. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. I know some of you are listening have no idea what I'm going on about. Let me get back to what I was saying before about, you know, the old man or whatever. You know, as much as I love shows like To Catch a Predator, you know, even if you didn't see To Catch a Predator, all of the media attention regarding, like, you know, online predators and all of that sort of stuff, I think it in a very subtle way, I think it conditions society to be more and more kind of standoffish, skeptical, judgmental. It causes society to be more suspicious of men in general. And, you know, that's just one example. There's also the phenomenon of true crime. You know, those 35-year-old Karens that watch hours and hours of true crime? You know, the growth of true crime, the rise in popularity of true crime really surprised me, because I was into it in the early 2000s before it was popular. When it was weird to be into true crime, I had sort of a little bit of an interest in it. I kind of, you know, grew out of it eventually. But all of this kind of culture leads to a kind of phobia amongst the population of men. And look, I'm not saying that the opposite is a good thing. You know, I'm not saying that we should return to the, you know, 1950s where parents would send their kids off to the, you know, the local Catholic boys' summer school where all of the priests would hang out, you know? Like, I'm not saying we should go back in time 100 years because that's like the opposite extreme. No, I just think that there's a downside. There is an unintended consequence of all of this rhetoric about, you know, the, you know, stranger danger and online predators and true crime. I just think that there's an unintended consequence of all of this. Maybe a good way of, like, you know, explaining it would be an example, right? Let me give you an example. This has happened to me a couple of times. Have you ever been, like, at a bus stop late at night or in some public place late at night and, you know, you're by yourself, but then a young woman comes to that same bus stop, right, and she's by herself. And you can see her kind of eyeing you out the corner of her eye. Like, is this guy a threat to me? You know, like, because she's been conditioned, somewhat justifiably, to always, you know, have situational awareness. And, you know, you're standing there and you want to kind of, like, almost go up to her and be like, or you want to somehow, like, you know, communicate to her, like, no, don't worry, I'm not, you know, a threat kind of thing. Like, it's not being a white knight or anything. It's just this, like, desire to, like, to feel that you have to explain yourself. To, you know, you're made uncomfortable by the fact that people feel uncomfortable around you. There's a kind of self-censorship, a kind of self-shaming. And I don't really hear many people talking about it. You know, at the start of this video, I talked about BreadTube, you know. BreadTube's... You know, BreadTube will say to men, you just need to do better, man. You just need to, like, be better men, you know, some, like, totally, like, gilded position that is like condescending and insulting. Whereas the manosphere, they complain about superfluous stuff that is irrelevant. Anyway, what I wanted to finish off today's video with is what I always give, which is advice, okay? I want to give you some advice, okay, if you're a man. Okay, I don't want you to go about with this need to, like, explain yourself as being, like, a good guy, okay? Next time you're, if you, you know, walk through Target and you stumble into the women's underwear section by accident, don't, like, you know, hurriedly try and, you know, get out of there before anyone sees you, okay? Stop and hang out there for a couple of minutes, okay? Wait until a woman sees you there and then, like, conspicuously inspect the bras before leaving, okay? Obviously, I'm being facetious, but the point is, don't carry this, like, sense of shame with you. You know, about a year ago, I talked about the gynocentric black pill. It was this really kind of, like, nutless kind of vibe, this energy that was radiating out of, like, certain corners of the internet. Like, people saying, you know, never talk to a woman unless she gives you choosing signals. Like, you know, it's like, what are you, a gelding? You know, like, what kind of, like, low-T position is that? You know, like, I know we have our memes about how, you know, women are the selectors and all that sort of stuff, but how low-T is it? How gelded is it? You know, how much of a milk-fed gimp are you that you won't talk to a woman unless she gives you quote-unquote choosing signals that she wants to talk to you or that she's attracted to you before you make a move? You know, don't feel that you're encroaching by going out in the world and just saying what you want and being who you are. Don't feel like the world in some arcane way belongs to everybody else and you're just like walking, you know, you're intruding on it. I remember many years ago, this would have been 2011, me and my sisters were with my mother and we went up to Darwin, which is where I was born. And we were south of Darwin in this like tiny little, you know, Australian outback town with like 100 people in it. And yeah, it's about 1,000,000 degrees Celsius. So we stopped off at like a bar to get a drink, this like dive bar in the Australian outback. And my sisters walked in there, you know, in their dresses or whatever. And you could see like the old bar flies in there kind of ogle them. And later on, we were in the car. I said, you know, did it make you a little bit uncomfortable, you know, walking into a bar like that? It's, you know, because they were like in their late 20s at the time. And my sister said, like, why? I had just as much of a right to be in that bar as they did. You know, just because it's in the middle of the outback, which is a public place in Australia, if you're a citizen, just because it's a bar that happens to be frequented by bar flies, why is it somehow in some nebulous way their territory? You know, it's not their territory. My sister was right. She had just as much of a right to be there as they did. That's why I cringe when I hear people say, like, oh, it's so sad for a 45-year-old man or whatever, or woman, to go to like a nightclub where 18-year-olds are. Like, you can go to like the nightclub scene of your city at any age, okay? Who says that you're not allowed to go there? Oh, because of some nebulous social contract that says it's only for people like, you know, 18 to 30 or whatever that should go there. Like, I don't know, it's, you know what they used to do, and I'm sure they still do, on many farms. I remember learning about this growing up in New Zealand, which is, you know, full of cattle farms and sheep farms and everything, is what they would do is they would put the animals in fields that were surrounded by electric fences when they were young, when the cubs were young. And, the little spring lambs would go up to the fences and get stung on the nose by the electric fence. And as the lambs got older, the people who ran the farm would just turn the fences off entirely. Like, they could just remove the fences entirely in some cases because the animals just learned that there's some places that they're wanted and other places that they're not wanted, basically. And I feel that some people, especially men, are the same. They condition themselves to think, well, we're only wanted in these very specific areas, so let's just hang out in these very specific areas. And they they limit themselves. And this, by the way, is just how society, I would say, implicitly shames men. This is not to speak of the more brazen, like obvious, explicitly like anti-male stuff, but you know, at least there's a narrative. You know, I'm not a big fan of the manosphere, but I guess there's a little bit of comfort in it being there. You know, at least it provides a counter narrative, right? This is what people said about Andrew Tate. Like, Andrew Tate's a joke. Like, if you take Andrew Tate seriously, then you need help. But the good thing about having an Andrew Tate-like figure there is that, at least symbolically, it is like a pro-male narrative. And I know I keep saying this, but this is not like whinging and complaining, okay? Men will always make up 50% of the global population, give or take. So it's not like we need to worry about there being like a genuinely dangerous movement against us. You know, we make up 50% of the Earth's population. And when you combine the East and the West and the Middle, we actually are still the dominant, you know, people, you know, like most world leaders are men. So this isn't like some like, oh, whoa, always men, we're so picked on. No, no, that is not my philosophy. I'm just saying in the micro sense, in Western society, when you're walking through the mall or you're at a bus stop at night, don't feel that you need to, like, in some arcane way, apologize for being a man in that environment, okay? Don't feel that you need to prove to the people around you that you're not a creep or anything. And that's not to say that you should be creepy. Like, there is such a thing as being creepy, being weird. You know, I actually, when Tim Walz came out with the weird narrative, I agreed with him. I was like, yeah, Trump and all those guys, they are weird. You know, Elon's a weirdo. Tucker Carlson, he gave a speech in front of like a Trump rally. This was a few weeks ago now. And he was talking about like his daughter and spanking and about discipline. And I was listening to that thinking like, man, Tucker Carlson's got some skeletons in his closet, man. He's got some weird stuff going on upstairs because like that was weird. Okay, so I'm not saying that you should be creepy. I'm just saying that don't feel that your existence needs to be explained in a given context, okay? Another example that I just thought about right now, I remember a few years ago, quite a long time ago, 7-8 years ago, there was a story, I can't remember if it was in New Zealand or Australia, where there was a teenage girl, like a popular, pretty teenage girl who was having some sort of like, she'd been at a party and she'd taken something and she was having like a little bit of an overdose. So the other kids there called an ambulance, you know, they called the emergency number. But the two paramedics that showed up, who were both men, refused to help the girl as she's having an overdose because they would have had to have, like, removed her clothes and performed some sort of, some sort of life-saving treatment that would have nonetheless been quite invasive, like not CPR, but something similar to that. And I don't remember the whole story, but I very vaguely recall it being some scandal because they didn't do what needed to be done then and there. So they rushed her to the hospital, and I can't remember if she died or if she had long-lasting injuries because it took them way longer than it should have to get the substances out of her system. And it all started with these two male paramedics who were afraid to do their job because I vaguely recall this being sort of around that 2016, 2017, you know, height of the Me Too movement era. Okay, and that's what I'm saying. Don't be those guys. Don't be that guy, please. Okay, just don't apologize for your existence. Okay, I don't care if you're a man or a woman, whoever you are. Don't apologize for your existence like that. Don't worry about it. But I digress.